everyone, and welcome to this week's EHS podcast for the week ending April 17th. My name is Alan Nguyen.
And I'm Allison Cranky.
And we'll be bringing you the latest news in environmental health and safety. So Allison, I believe you have a story for us about Minority Health Month.
Yeah, so Minority Health Month is acknowledged every April, and it's a time to raise public awareness about the health and healthcare disparities that are still continuing to affect racial and ethnic minorities. So many minorities face greater workplace safety risks than the average worker. For example, in the United States, Latinos have the highest workplace fatality rate among all population groups. So this is a statistic that has held true now for the past 17 years. Looking specifically at the construction industry, Latino workers make up nearly one in every four construction workers in the U.S., and they face a 20% higher risk of sustaining a fatal work injury. There are many reasons why statistics like this exist. Unsurprisingly, minorities who are at the highest risk in the workplace are immigrant workers who do not speak English. So they may not understand safety instructions or warnings, and they may also not have been effectively trained. So this presents a clear opportunity for employers to step up. OSHA has policies in place dictating that non-English speaking workers be trained in their native languages, particularly when it comes to their rights to a safe workplace. And providing safety information in the worker's native language can be the difference between life and death in some cases. So employers who have a high population of workers for whom English is a second language can and should try to go above and beyond what is regulated in order to protect the health and safety of these workers. So by doing things like ensuring comprehension by testing workers following the delivery of critical safety information. In addition to construction, there are several other industries where minority workers often will make up a larger percentage of the worker population, including agriculture and manufacturing. So it's important for companies operating in these kinds of industries to factor in the needs of minority workers into their health and safety training program and encourage open communication between employer and employee. And Alan, you've got an interesting story for us coming from the oil industry.
Yeah, so this Tuesday, lawmakers in the state of North Dakota approved a bill to create a pilot project aimed at treating and recycling some of the estimated 1 million tons of oil waste annually for road building and other uses. Officials say that the main goal of the project is to put all the waste from oil drilling into good use. The bill has been approved by North Dakota's senator and is in the final stages of finalization. And to give our listeners some perspective on how much waste is extracted from these oil drilling operations, each time a company drills an oil well, they are left with some amount of waste equaling the size of an Olympic-sized swimming pool that either has been restored on site or dumped in a special waste landfill. The measure would set aside about $65,000 for the state's health department to monitor an independent pilot project and develop standards. North Dakota's geology poses a challenge because drill cutting can contain high contaminations of salt, which along with any oil residue would have to be removed so that it does not threaten land or underground water supplies. Some companies have already come forward and pitched plans to the state's health department, which plans on selecting the best option to establish a recycling facility for drill cuttings. Along with the state, the legislation passed on Tuesday would require a third-party contractor to review the process used in the pilot project. State officials estimate that more than 1 million tons of drilling waste is created annually in North Dakota. And while the project may look good on paper, there is still skepticism from various state groups emphasizing that in order for the project to be considered a success, it has to have a true beneficial use and not just a way to get rid of drilling waste. Porter, who is one of the bill's main sponsors, said that the clay-like drill cuttings are ideal for building roads and states that much of the material now used for road buildings in western North Dakota is trucked from other parts of the state. So it'll be interesting to see if the project does indeed yield benefits in the upcoming months. And Allison, I believe you have a story for us about the international aviation industry.
Yeah, so the Thai government is implementing big changes to aviation safety following flight bans on new Thai schedules from China, South Korea, and Japan in recent weeks. So these bans are all in reaction to safety concerns highlighted by a recent audit conducted by the International Civil Aviation Organization, which is a United Nations specialized agency. Their recent Universal Safety Oversight Audit Program report detailed significant lapses in safety oversight at crew, aircraft, and airport levels. A June 2nd deadline has been set by the organization for conformance, and so the possibility of other countries applying similar flight bans in the near future is high. Australia, China, France, and Germany are all already reportedly in discussion with Thai authorities regarding the possibility of individual flight agreements. In response to these developments, the Thai government is going to be introducing two new safety authorities to handle aviation and infrastructure safety compliance. They're intending to hire European Aviation Safety Agency and FAA compliance specialists to ensure that the appropriate standards are going to be met. And in other international aviation safety news, India has gotten its Category 1 aviation safety ranking back from the U.S. Federal Aviation Authority. The FAA had downgraded India's aviation safety ranking in January 2014 after India, similar to Thailand, failed to meet the safety requirements of the International Civil Aviation Organization. So with their Category 1 aviation safety ranking now restored, India's airlines will have more opportunities to add flights to the United States and expand their service. So that's just two recent examples of how seriously international safety standards are viewed within the aviation industry and how drastic the impacts of noncompliance can be. And now, Alan, I think you have an update for us from the FDA.
Yeah, so the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, also known as the FDA, recently proposed a rule to update its regulation on registration of food facilities related to food safety modernization. Under the current regulation, food facilities that manufacture, pack, or hold food for consumption in the U.S. must register with the FDA. Currently, establishments, farms, restaurants, and certain other entities are exempt from the requirement to register their facilities with the FDA. The proposed amendments would expand the number of establishments that are considered quote-unquote retail food establishments, and therefore more establishments will be exempt from registration. The retail food establishment is currently defined as an establishment that sells food products directly to consumers as its primary function. An establishment's primary function is to sell food directly to consumers if the annual monetary value of sales of food products directly to consumers exceeds the annual value of sales of food products to all other buyers. The proposed rule would clarify that in determining the primary function of an establishment at such direct sales platforms as roadside stands, farmers markets, and community-supported agriculture programs. Because the amended definition would exempt additional establishments from the requirement to register, the establishments would not be subject to the requirements of the Food Safety Modernization Act preventive control rulemakings, which apply to facilities that are required to register. The FDA is estimating that there are approximately 71,000 farms that only sell food products directly to consumers in ways that include farmers markets, roadside stands, and CSA programs. For facilities that are not exempt from the registration, the proposed rule would add new provisions to the current regulations to codify certain provisions of the Food Modernization Act that were self-implementing and effective upon enactment of the Act. These provisions include and state that registrations for domestic facilities must contain the email address of the contact person of the facility, and registrations for foreign facilities must contain the email address of the U.S. agent for the facility. Food facilities that are required to register with the FDA must renew their registrations every 2 years between October 1st and December 31st of each even-numbered year. Also, all food facility registrations must contain an insurance that the FDA will be permitted to inspect the facility at the time and in the manner permitted by the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. In addition, the proposed rule would add certain new requirements that would improve the food facility registration system. For example, all food facility registrations would be required to be submitted to the FDA electronically, although this requirement would not take into effect before January 4th of 2016. Also, registrations would be required to contain the type of activity conducted by the facility for each food product category. As well, the proposed rule would provide for measures to verify information submitted in registrations. And of course, if you'd like to learn more about this story, be sure to check out the resource link of this podcast. And that concludes this week's EHS podcast. As always, if you want to learn more about any of the stories that we covered in this week's podcast, be sure to check out the resource link. And as always, thanks for listening.